Good morning. This is Brian Trumbore with your Week in Review for Saturday, January 24th. It's a new administration in the same global recession. I was struck by the sight of Vice President Dick Cheney in watching the stirring inauguration of our 44th president, sitting all bundled up in his wheelchair following a back injury suffered while moving boxes the day before. Cheney was hunched over, peering over the rim of his glasses. "Why, yes," I thought, "it's old man Potter from It's a Wonderful Life." How utterly appropriate, and perhaps the perfect metaphor for the times we face. Many of us are at the depths of despair. Some high-profile types have even taken it to the extreme. But where we diverge from the film, at least thus far, is we're not sure if our drama will have the same happy ending. A community rallying behind its best, the upright citizen who just needs some help to see him through. Many of the George Baileys, such as small business owners, need a loan, but in our case, the banks have largely stopped lending around the world, and you might say, who can blame them? There's a total lack of confidence and trust, which would be bad enough by itself, but is compounded by this incredible wealth destruction, starting with real estate and then the equity markets, along with a sense of fear over one's job security. It's also overwhelming. It's also a job for a million guardian angels, nay, 10 million. It's a job perhaps beyond the capacity of Barack Obama to effect change, but think of your best sports comebacks. We need a spark that at the time may seem meaningless. It's that two-out, two-strike single in the bottom of the ninth with the bases empty and your team down two. It's that first touchdown pass that cuts the deficit to a still seemingly insurmountable 21 points. It's the pass that propels your car into 10th place with only 10 laps to go, but at least the leader is now in sight. Something to get things started, provide hope. We don't know what the initial piece of evidence will be that we'll look back on and say was the critical first step to get us out of this mess, but it will come. Some say it will be an uptick in residential real estate, others positive news on the jobs front. I'll be focused on anything globally. I want to reiterate that while I have to report all the bad news, and while I was as early as any in calling for this debacle, recognizing no one had figured out the credit crisis aspect ahead of time, for some reason I'm now strangely optimistic. Maybe I'm just tired of being a doom and gloomer. Maybe I'm thinking my guardian angel Clarence is about to bump into me on the street. Something good will happen long before the year ends when it comes to the financial crisis. Of course, we can't lose all sense of reality, and I'm the last one to do so. We are another week closer to Iran getting the bomb, after all, but let's just see if Barack Obama or some other leader out there can light the fire. In the meantime, I have some depressing reporting to do. Ian Bremmer and Nouriel Roubini had the following comments in the Wall Street Journal. Quote, "Some optimistic experts are now saying that though this will be a turbulent year for global markets, the worst of the financial crisis is now behind us. Would it were so. We believe that 2009 will be tougher than many anticipate. We enter the new year grappling with the most serious global economic and financial crisis since the Great Depression. The U.S. economy is, at best, halfway through a recession that began in December 2007 and will prove the longest and most severe of the post-war period. Credit losses of close to $3 trillion are leaving the U.S. banking and financial system insolvent, and the credit crunch will persist as households, financial firms, and corporations with high debt ratios and solvency problems undergo a sharp deleveraging process. Worse, all of the world's advanced economies are in recession. Many emerging markets, including China, face the threat of a hard landing. Some fear that these conditions will produce a dangerous spike in inflation, but the greater risk is for a kind of global stag deflation, a toxic combination of economic stagnation, recession, and falling prices. We're likely to see vulnerable European markets, Hungary, Romania, and Bulgaria, key Latin American markets, Argentina, Venezuela, Ecuador, and Mexico, Asian countries, Pakistan, Indonesia, and South Korea, and countries like Russia, Ukraine, and the Baltic states facing severe financial pressure. That was Ian Bremmer and Nouriel Roubini. Morgan Stanley Asia's Stephen Roach said, "We're in a post-bubble global recession, and post-bubble recessions are lethal for growth. It will be a long time before the world experiences anything more than anemic recovery. Thomas Friedman, in his New York Times piece, cited economist David Smick. "Right now," said Smick, "the bankers are sitting on mountains of cash, including our bailout money, because they know their true balance sheets are a disaster, far worse than publicly stated. The situation will likely worsen as delinquent consumer and auto loans are piled atop bad mortgages. Obama needs to inject some truth serum into the banking discussion. No one trusts the banks, and even the bankers don't trust each other. Bringing clarity to banks' balance sheets," said Smick, "is the first step to fixing America's bank lending problem." Ah, yes, the banks. Look what's happening in the UK. There are some, such as noted investor Jim Rogers, who say Britain is basically bankrupt. It is forced to ply its banks with billions and billions to keep its financial system afloat. Royal Bank of Scotland, which is now 70% owned by the government, is about to report a stupendous $39 billion loss for 2008. Lloyds Banking Group, 43% owned by the government, could join RBS in being fully nationalized before long. Some estimate this would saddle the government of Gordon Brown with $4 trillion in new liabilities, an amount far exceeding the country's annual economic output. Prime Minister Brown is particularly upset with RBS for taking, quote, irresponsible risk. Almost all their losses are in subprime mortgages in America and related to the acquisition of ABM AMRO, said Mr. Brown. British currency is in free fall and hit levels versus U.S. dollar not seen since 1985, and like in the U.S., Britain's banks, despite all the capital coming their way, aren't lending. The U.K., by the way, officially entered recession with word it had its second straight quarter of negative GDP in Q4, down 1.5%. A full decline of 2.8% is projected here for 2009, as unemployment now up to 6.1% rockets above 8% by year-end. Elsewhere around the world, Singapore is tapping its reserves for the first time ever to pay for a stimulus program. This after reporting GDP fell 16.8% from Q3 to Q4, staggering, and greater than an earlier estimate of 12.5%. Japan saw its exports in December plunge 35%. And China reported GDP for the fourth quarter was 6.8%, or below the magic 8% level that is deemed the mark above which the economy can provide jobs for any who want one, including those displaced from rural areas. China is calculating its GDP year over year, but if you look quarter to quarter, as Singapore did, it's more like a contraction of 0.1%, according to economists at Citigroup. Yep, I'm looking for that ray of sunshine, and none are to be found, but just 20 days to pitchers and catchers. In the United States, jobless claims for the week hit 589,000. Just dreadful, while housing starts for December were far below expectations of 550,000, making it the worst year on record for home building, dating back to 1959 when they first started keeping track of such things. So you might say the stage is set globally for massive unrest, and it's started in Iceland, the Baltics, and parts of China. Economist Robert Wade, addressing a protest meeting in Reykjavik Cinema, recently warned that the world was approaching a new tipping point. Starting from March to May 2009, we can expect large-scale civil unrest, he said. It will be caused by the rise of general awareness throughout Europe, America, and Asia that hundreds of people in rich and poor countries are experiencing rapidly falling consumption standards, that the crisis is getting worse, not better, and that it has escaped the control of public authorities, national and international. So it's not just in the U.S. where we're having problems. Look at the arrogance and hubris of one John Thain, CEO of Merrill Lynch, who's just shown the door at Bank of America about 4 months after he got it to swallow his brokerage giant and all the toxic waste sitting on its books that has since been lodged in the throat of B of A CEO Ken Lewis. Thain, another of those Goldman Sachs wonder boys that the world could easily do without, received a $15 million signing bonus when he took the helms at Merrill a little over a year ago. Then, after accepting TARP funds following the B of A merger, he allegedly handed out $3 to $4 billion in bonuses to Merrill employees before the formal completion of the merger. Then he asked the board for a $10 million bonus for himself at a time when other Wall Street executives, such as Morgan Stanley's John Mack and J.P. Morgan's Jamie Dimon, were turning them down. Then Thain clearly lied to Ken Lewis in discussing the breadth of Merrill's losses for the quarter. Suddenly, Lewis figured it out. We're still in December. and before the shareholder vote approving the merger was complete, told the government. The government said, if you think you're backing out of this one, you can forget it. And Lewis went home to hide under the covers like Ebenezer Scrooge before he was visited by the spirits. Only one problem. Lewis knew the losses would eventually come out. Merrill reported over $15 billion of them, on top of B of A's own record losses of nearly $3 billion, and the stock market tanked, leaving many B of A shareholders wondering if they had been leveled with before they voted yes on the merger in the first place. So now we advance to this past week and Thain being fired. Didn't help that Charlie Gasparino of CNBC broke the story that Mr. Thain had spent over $1.2 million of shareholder taxpayer money to redecorate his office suite, yet another item for which he will forever be known as a classic example of how some in this Gilded Age, too, just didn't have a clue. It's utterly disgraceful. Meanwhile, Microsoft, which hasn't laid off anyone in its history going back to 1975, is slashing 5,000 jobs. This after the company reported revenue just increased 2%, far below the company's own expectations. What I found interesting was CEO Steve Ballmer's memo to employees, wherein he stated, to increase efficiency, we're taking a series of aggressive steps. We'll cut travel expenditures 20% and make significant reductions in spending on vendors and contingent staff, and we've reduced our marketing budgets. Of course, all of this spreads across the prairie to impact hotel workers in Pittsburgh or New York, for example. Finally, you have Treasury Secretary-designate Timothy Geithner. He of the tax issues that he's less than forthcoming on. I've written little of this man, but he should not be taking a seat at the cabinet table. He's tarnished. That said, he will be approved next week, and then he has to officially deal with his statement that China manipulates its currency. Of course they do, just don't say it out loud and during a global recession, Mr. Geithner. Who do you think is financing our massive debt? By now, every second grader knows a simple lesson of the Great Depression and the evils of protectionism. I've written on numerous occasions that bad government can make for the difference between recession and depression. We had an example of that this week. If I were Geithner, I'd stay at home and send tall Paul Volcker on the China missions. It was another down week, the third straight sizable one for all the major averages. Earnings from some heavyweights were mixed. IBM, Apple, and Google were positive. eBay, Microsoft, and General Electric were major downers. In the case of GE, CEO Jeffrey Immelt needs to take a few chill pills next time he goes on television, and in simply meeting already lowered expectations, shares in GE fell to $12 as investors have zero confidence in now 10% dividend will hold. On the merger front, Pfizer, looking ahead to the day its patent on Lipitor in 2011 is going after Wyeth and its product line attempt to fill the coming revenue gap. Few believe this is a good move. I meant to say that Pfizer is looking ahead to the day it loses its patent on Lipitor and the patent expires. First part, IBM said that despite an extremely difficult economic environment, it expected increasing profitability from its software and service businesses and that customers are continuing to sign up for outsourcing and other service contracts. CEO Samuel Palmisano said, we are confident about 2009 as IBM stuck to its forecast of increasing earnings through 2010. For the week, the Dow Jones fell 2.5% to close at 80.77. The S&P 500 lost 2.1%, and NASDAQ declined 3.4%. The October and November lows, however, have held for now. And a note on Treasury yields, the yield on the 30-year Treasury bond rose 43 basis points to 3.31%, its worst week since April 1987. I'll be back with you next Saturday, January 31st.